Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
It is time for Supply Chain Now Radio, sponsored by Apex Atlanta and Talent Stream. Broadcasting live from the supply chain capital of the country, Atlanta, Georgia, Supply Chain Now Radio spotlights the best in all things supply chain. The people, the companies, the technologies, the best practices, and the critical issues of the day. Now, here's your host, Scott Luton.
Hey, thanks, Katie. Good morning. Glad to be back here today, focusing once again on the hashtag Supply Chain City, Atlanta, Georgia, home of your NL East champion, Atlanta Braves. Excited about that. We're going to be speaking with two leaders and organizations doing big things in the supply chain world, especially here in the Metro Atlanta area. But first, I'll say good morning to my very talented co-host. We added the very, another like superlative, that. Superlative there. Easy for you to say. Ben Harris, Director of Supply Chain Ecosystem Expansion with the Metro Atlanta Chamber. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Scott.
Will Haraway, Founder and Lead Evangelist with Backbeat Marketing. Good morning, Will.
Good morning, Scott.
Glad to have y'all both back your world travels.
Yes, sir.
And looking forward to hearing from you both in just a minute on how we always start the show, a few of the top things to know in supply chain now. But now let's welcome today's featured guests, John Holly, Deputy Chief People Officer with Kumho Tire Georgia. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Scott.
Glad to have you. Perry Falk, EVP, Executive Vice President of Carrier Sales with Nolan Transportation Group. Good morning, Perry.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And a fellow, this is a Clemson alum, but yep. Another fellow Clemson fan. We had some big news this morning, which we'll save for the next show, Perry.
Sounds good.
Because you're a South Carolina alum, right?
A South Carolina alum. But lifelong Clemson fan, which makes no sense.
I know, it doesn't make any sense.
It's a lot.
It's interesting at family dinner.
At some point, we're going to have to do a deep dive on that,
yeah,
Scott.
That's right.
Deep issues is what it shows.
I thought, Barry, I would thought that you would have felt proud that I saw the light, kind of like the Saul Paul conversion there. But anyway, love old Dabo. All right, so getting back to the topic at hand, the top things to know in supply chain now. So in this first segment, Ben and Will are going to weigh in on some of the top things to know in supply chain now. So want to kick off the conversation this morning with some big news, Ben. So tell us what was announced here recently.
Yeah, I was actually down in Savannah last week at the Georgia Ports Authority State of the Port Address down there. It's a gathering of about 1,400 folks. They do basically an update, if you will, State of the Port, as they say, as far as what's going on with the port, projections as far as container volumes, improvements, that kind of thing. And they had tons of great information there. But one of the most interesting things is that for the fifth year in a row, Area Development Magazine has rated Georgia the top state for doing business.
Huge.
So a lot goes into that. Obviously, lots of factors, whether it's incentives and tax structure, government and regulatory affairs, things like that. Lots of different factors go into that. But I noticed the one thing that didn't go into that was supply chain logistics. That's actually kind of roped into cost of doing business in the state, actually. Yeah. But Georgia, of all these categories that they ranked for that went into this, Georgia was top three in almost every one of them and top five in every category. So no surprise that Georgia would be the number one state.
Yeah, especially in this room.
Yeah. Yeah. That's no surprise to us, obviously. But, for a fifth year in a row, that's simply unprecedented in the industry. So huge honor for us. It was really exciting for Governor Nathan Deal to make that announcement there, especially as he is leaving office this year, which is it's one of those things he's done. He's been anything but a lame duck, I would say. It's been a great run so far for him. And I think hopefully we can continue that trend, though, because 5 years in a row, that's definitely a company of our own now. So doing a 6 year is going to be tough. But again, huge announcement there.
Yep.
Additionally, there was another announcement also.
Hey, before we go into the next announcement, can I interject?
Please.
So we should give a big shout out to the hardworking Army of Economic Development folks that makes business happen. But also, just like the two business leaders we have here in this room, there's reasons these folks invest in the state of Georgia for all these reasons that have been mentioned and others. And we got to give a big shout out to that community, too. That's what helps make Georgia is such a special place to do business in. So Area Development from Supply Chain Now Radio, we'd welcome you here. Bring the title belt that comes with the 5-year ranking, and we'll make the award here right on the show. Right, Ben?
That's right. That's right. Like well, and I think the two companies we have in the room are big success stories here in Georgia as
huge.
Well. Of course, John, you did Kumho Tire. Kumho, you know, Tire. How many years in the making has it been? A couple years
actually
now?
The plant has been in operation now for 3 years.
Right. And how many folks do you have at the plant now?
We have about 420, 450 people that are there making tires every day, about 9 to 10,000 a day.
There you go. Goodness. Very port-related work as well there.
Very much so. Being at kind of the crossroads there at Macon helps us transition and ship things efficiently.
Absolutely. And Perry, I'm sure a lot of what you do is very port-related, I'm sure, in a lot of the markets that you're in.
Absolutely. We do a lot of container drayage at the port, and so we do a lot of that. And we have, we've been in Atlanta for 13 years, and we've got 1,000 people working for us, so really exciting for us.
Yeah, a lot of that traffic flows upstream and downstream, from Savannah. So,
and we had some big news coming out of the port. Speaking of upstream and downstream, Ben, you were as part of your visits this past week, right?
Yeah, same place. Obviously, when GPA was doing their updates as far as what was going on the port, they have a plan in place now, a master plan to move from 5.5 million TEUs, which is their capacity right now on port, to 8 million TEUs by 2021. So, a very aggressive goal, but a very exciting goal none the least. In addition to that, they are doubling rail capacity also by 2021. They're on port rail capacity. So as far as the mega rail site, that's going to be a major improvement there from a capacity standpoint. In addition to that, they also just announced their own labor program as well, which is the YES program. And so there was the one thing, you know, that we talk about here a lot is workforce. Mm. But the one thing that we don't talk about is, you know, some actual programs, you know, being Scott, you were just down in Savannah, Tybee Island, to be exact. Talking to some young folks about this. And so this is a program that's aimed at ushering in a new era and a new generation, really, of port related logistics and supply chain workforces, workforce individuals down in the Savannah area. That's long been a place where they've look for improvement in that area down there. So this is an extremely exciting announcement. Also got a standing ovation, I might add, actually at the awards ceremony as well. So really exciting program from a workforce standpoint as well.
That's awesome. And speaking of our visits down to Tybee Island, I've got to give a big shout out to APIC Savannah, which is a new chapter down there. They've had incredible growth over its first 18 months or so that it's been in existence. And we are down there at the Tybee Island Maritime Academy talking supply chain, planting seeds of supply chain management with fifth graders. So, you know, part of our workforce and addressing our workforce needs is making sure our next generation knows all the opportunities in the manufacturing and supply chain space. So,
amen.
Neat group. Okay, so let's move from global trade tailwinds to a few headwinds. And as always, Will is our resident tariff subject matter expert, which I love having on the show because it's not a topic I'd like to talk about. I like passing the buck there. So let's talk tariffs this morning. Will Haraway, founder and lead evangelist with Backbeat Marketing. So, Will, what are some of your latest observations on tariffs?
Well, on Monday, the new tariffs took effect, 10% on some $200 billion worth of Chinese imports and retailers. And, you know, you kind of knew this was coming, but in investment calls and some interviews, some of these retailers are starting to say, hey, guess what? This is going to mean some price hikes on the consumer. And you didn't think they were just going to eat that cost, of course. But Walmart, Target, Gap, Best Buy, they've all warned in earnings calls over the last couple of weeks that price hikes are basically unavoidable. And you can see why they're being forced to squeeze their margins or raise their prices on a variety of goods just as the holiday season's arriving. You know, the tariffs raise the effects of the rising costs to retailers. You know, they're now spending more on technology, logistics costs, higher gas prices, and, you know, it's all just kind of a trickle-down effect. And it's hitting a wide assortment of goods, apparel to appliances. And where it gets interesting is the retailers are working with their overseas suppliers on how to respond to this impact. And one of those places that you see that is with customs brokers. Customs brokers, you know, have been working overtime in the days leading up to the deadline, which was, you know, on Monday, filing entry paperwork for shipments, clogging the ports, as we've talked about on the show previously. Hoping that these electronic filings would be processed before midnight on Sunday. But, some of this, the work that goes into that, you can see right here in Supply Chain City. Another friend of the show, American Global Logistics, they have a customs brokerage division, and they help their clients and they basically advised them all summer with the right strategy to approach these tariffs. You know, they run analytics on every customer, help them determine which of the products are going to be affected, and really just how to sort of delay and readjust and realign those shipments as they come. And that's from Lori Fox, who's their VP of Customs Brokerage. We'll just have to continue to see. I mean, it raises to 25% at the beginning of next year, and then we're going to we'll see.
Is that from 10 to 25%?
Yes.
Is that
right?
Wow.
I know.
We just need to have one of those beer summits and invite everybody in the backyard of the White House and let's hash it all out and do away with them, right?
Well, yeah, but the president doesn't drink, but I guess he doesn't drink.
Moving quickly. So right quick before we tackle your next note there, Will, you, in one of our last segments, our last shows, we were talking about the recycling policy changes in China. And so I was in an office supply store out in Walton County earlier this week. And I've been noticing how our printer paper has started to go through. Prices starting to go up. So I was doing a little Googling, right? When you don't understand something, first thing you do, right? And I'd noticed that because of the Chinese policy changes when it comes to recycling and what they're accepting, it's leading to a lot of different repercussions, but one of them is office paper is starting to go up. Price is starting to go up. And secondly, corrugated is starting to go up. And I believe this article referenced one of the well-known retailers that talked about their cardboard box pricing had doubled. So no wonder we're starting to see as consumers some of these trickle-down effects that you're talking about.
That's exactly right.
We're hoping let's tackle the recycling challenges, but let's also tackle these tariffs and these policies with what is still the largest U.S. Trade partner, which is China.
That's right.
So, all right, good stuff. And not as difficult as I was expecting. So good stuff there, Will.
Scott, we should make note when we have our guest from Kimberly-Clark on at some point to definitely talk about that for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. And that the date of that show, I believe, is August 26th. We're going to have a panel of supply chain leaders from Kimberly-Clark join us here on Supply Chain Radio. October. It's a great point.
October.
26th. October.
Yeah.
Yep. Did I say? Yeah, October.
We're here for you, man.
Thank you all. Picking me up. All right. So speaking of global trade, you know, freight forwarding, big part of the supply chain community that fuels global trade. Will, what are you seeing in the global freight forwarding space?
Sure. I mean, we've touched on this before, but I mean, the news just keeps happening and this space just continues to evolve. I mean, just in the past week, so we've talked about on Convoy before, you know, they're tech trucking, Uber for freight, all that kind of stuff. They announced a raise of $185 million last week, which brings them up to unicorn status, always a, you know, noteworthy achievement. And just a few days before, Freightos, which is...
I love how you say that name.
Freightos?
Yeah.
Freightos. Yeah.
That's Southern Mississippi drawl. Yeah, coming right on.
I was going to say, do we have like a sound effect for a unicorn? Also,
we need to get one. We need to get one. So Freightos is a marketplace for logistics providers, not just trucking, but also ocean shipping and air cargo. But they announced a raise of $44 million last week, bringing their total funding to $94 million. Mm. So again, and we got to bring this back to our buddy Amari from a few shows ago, you know, from Sudu, wishing him the best of luck in his raise as well that he's looking for. But the interesting thing to me here was that the investors on both of these sides, the lead in Convoy's round was Google.
Yeah.
The lead in Freightos' round was General Electric. Mm. So it's not, you know, this caliber of company and investment is adding credibility to the space, and shippers are beginning to use these services in very specific ways. And this is interesting. You know, I was with Ben at the Supply Chain Leadership Council last month up at the chamber, the beautiful chamber offices there, and Ben had invited Matt Davis to speak to everybody there, and he was talking about Convoy specifically because a lot of his Gartner clients supplement their traditional shipping with convoy services rather than replace it completely. And Perry, I'd love to know what you think about this too, because I'm sure you do some of this as well. So instead of, so when in 2015, when a lot of these companies came about, the big talk was, well, this is just going to replace traditional shipping. Mm-hmm. This, it's all going to be, you know, the Uber model, the gig economy model, and that will replace it. But that hasn't been the case. In fact, right. what it is now is that they're using it supplementally for the most part. Like when you've got disruptive situations, like you saw a couple of weeks ago with Hurricane Florence.
Sure. So we used to, I mean, you look at Uber Freight's a great example because it's, you get that, you know, Uberization, right? It used to keep us up at night a little bit wondering what's going to happen when, you know, Uber Freight comes out. And we saw over time that kind of, you know, the way I described it was like the monster at the end of the movie. We were worried for a long time. We don't know what it is. And really, it just turned into be a traditional brokerage that's tech enabled. They have really great technology, really great software that really helps them. But at the end of the day, it is still just a freight brokerage. And so, you know, we were worried for a while, but it allowed us to feel confident that as we continue to invest in our tech, that, you know, we can still play ball. And they're, look, it's tough. Being a freight broker is not an easy job, and it's not easy for anybody.
Right.
And no, you know, there's no one fix software that's going to come out and be a solution for that and replace and disintermediate. But there are tools that can help you and give you that edge and give you that advantage that are very important and very important to long-term success to focus on those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what I've, you know, and that's what was so interesting about what Matt was saying is that, hey, it's not replacing, it's not disrupting necessarily. It's just an additional thing that is now available to people, especially when they're doing something more last minute. And there's another company I've spoken about before, out of Knoxville, Tennessee, Connexial, and spoke to them about this. And they actually report that their customers go the opposite way. They go through the Connexial dynamic load matching first to see what matches up. And that's the one that locates drivers based on ELD data, you know, verifying their route and hours of services to where the shipment is. So they'll go through that process, figure out what they can ship using that process, and then use their traditional methods.
So, I mean, people have gotten accustomed to a really easy, any service they use, you know, when you're getting an Uber, you're using Amazon, you're used to a really easy user interface that, you know, brings everything right to you. And that's what people are demanding. And you've got to start to move towards that over time.
Yeah.
Great point.
So it continues to evolve.
Yeah, it does continue to evolve. And speaking of the Supply Chain Leadership Council, Ben and the chamber do a great job hosting a wide variety of frontline topics. But a few months back, I attended the BITA folks, BITA, right? Talking blockchain. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And if you still think blockchain is a trend, you should hear from these folks and see what they're doing, because it's certainly here to stay, and it's going to revolutionize supply chain in many ways. So good stuff what the chamber's doing. Appreciate, Ben, your leadership there, and great commentary there, Will. And Perry, thanks for chiming in from an SME standpoint. We don't always get that in the same room, so hey, appreciate that.
Happy to contribute.
All right. So that concludes some of the top things to know in supply chain. Now we're going to move into our first segment with a featured guest. Our first guest today on Supply Chain Now Radio. We welcome John Holly.
Thank you.
Deputy Chief People Officer with Kumho Tire Georgia. Good morning again, John.
Good morning, Scott.
Glad you're here. Kumho Tire Georgia, one of the leading tire manufacturers in the world. Strong footprint in Georgia, plant in Macon, which we were talking earlier. Huge investment several years back. It's really paid off huge dividends, it seems like. And John, we're going to talk about one of the things that enables manufacturing plants and businesses to happen and succeed. And in this day and age where technology and robots and AI, all this cool stuff, you still got to have people making stuff happen, right?
There's no doubt about it. With us at Kumho, technology actually has been one of the foundations for Kumho being successful. And so with high-grade technology, with laser-guided vehicles, it's made the labor, it supplements the labor. It makes the job a little bit easier. A Kumho plant as compared to a traditional tire manufacturer is a lot easier. We've had tire manufacturers come along and said, you know, this is clean. We can almost eat off the floor kind of thing. Not that good, but
close.
But we demonstrate the fact that technology is leveraged and used, but you can't do it without the people. No matter what you do, there still is a role for the people, operators within the plant. And so the labor force is our bread and butter. Mm. We're fortunate in the Central Georgia area that we've been able to tap on some people who are able to come in with some experience. There are a lot of other manufacturers and producers in the area, but we've also found that people come from afar to actually come to be a part of that manufacturing situation. Some who've had tire experience, who have had closed down plants elsewhere, they'll follow the product, and that product is the tire manufacturing business. Mm.
Terrific. And so within this space, and I love your core message there, how the Kumho Tire folks are looking to leverage technology to make, not to make jobs go away, but to make them easier,
yes,
right? So absolutely. You can grow and produce more jobs absolutely. In many ways, yeah. So let's talk about one segment of the workforce and of the talent space, the contingent segment. And that can mean a lot of different things, but what are some of the trends you're seeing there, John?
Definitely, I think not just in the tire manufacturing business, but in business in general, there is a growing contingency workforce. And when we talk about contingency workforce and defining that, we're talking about people who are temps, maybe temporary agencies or staffing agencies. We're providing people, could be a contractor, somebody who's providing you a just-in-time service or a long-term contract. Could be freelancers, somebody who is just needing an immediate kind of a need. So there are all kinds of definitions of what these contingency workers are. Mm. But it's becoming much more evident these days that this is going to be a growing segment of the workforce. And so that means that organizations have to begin to adapt and change to attract, retain, engage, reward, all those things that you still need to do for those people, you've got to do also for this contingency workforce. Mm. So it's not like a traditional workforce in the past where, you know, somebody was there for the idea of, you know, getting some good medical insurance in a retirement plan. Mm. Still good medical insurance, but a retirement plan is not the traditional thing that it used to be. So therefore, how do you keep people motivated, coming up with creative and different ways of trying to engage them? So yeah, the contingency workforce is there. And it is growing. And yeah. So we're finding that to be very evident in what we do.
And it presents businesses. I can't remember if we said it in a warm-up conversation or maybe something you just said. Options are good. Businesses like options. Employees like options. Professionals like options. And it provides, you know, when you're using these different types of contingent opportunities, it provides just that, right?
Definitely.
Yeah.
One of the reasons we use contingency workforce also, it gives us flexibility as an organization. Instead of staffing for the peaks, instead of having that cost, that built-in embedded cost for a long period of time, you can employ people just in time. You know, you just may employ somebody for a week or a month or depending upon the project. So you're able to hit the peak with people at the right time. But when you're in that valley, then you don't have to have, again, that additional cost that's going to carry you. So you have to be able to maneuver, plan appropriately to be able to utilize this contingency workforce correctly.
Yep. Options are good. Flexibility is good for sure. So one of the things you touched on, kind of moving into the next topic we were talking about in the warm-up show, is employee engagement, yes. Right? Because some of the traditional carrots in that regard have changed, right? So let's talk about how is Kumho Tire, or what are your personal thoughts on employee engagement, keeping, you know, your employees productive, but just as important, satisfied and feeling successful and being successful.
Knowing what people want, that's going to be the main driver, I think, for deciding on how are you going to keep people engaged, how are you going to reward them, how are you going to recognize them. Things have changed. Now, we have gone from the days of, at least I can talk for myself, in terms of having kids where when they were actually competing in sports, you know, we were competing for that top trophy. We've gone to more of a situation where people are just kind of rewarded for just participating. but we find that when we in the labor force, is not just about people just participating, but they also still want to have that top reward. Mm. And so people get a little bit more selfish in terms of what their needs are. But the key thing as an employer is listening to people. What it is that they want? What do they need? A conversation that I've had with someone who was, you know, new in the workforce said that, you know, retirement benefits, 401k, all that's good. Health is good. But I got student loans. Your biggest thing that you can do for me is help me pay off my student loans. So you have to think a little bit differently about how you reward people. Then as you reward people and recognize people, then you've got the engagement is going to be at a high level. Because sometimes you think that you get somebody on a temporary basis or a freelance basis, they're not going to be as loyal. But they can be loyal, and the loyalty sometimes is dictated by the reward or recognition. So there are ways in which you can still keep people engaged at a high level without having the traditional trappings that we've had in the past.
Yep. So a little different twist on engagement. If you think about the proverbial talent management three-legged stool, you got to attract them, you got to develop them so that you can retain them, right?
Absolutely.
So what aspect of successful employee engagement would you put on, or what kind of emphasis do y'all put on professional development? You know, making, you know, that when employees start on the first day of 2019, how can we ensure that they'll be more capable the first day of 2020? So to speak,
having a very effective training plan, having a development plan, and people desire that. It's amazing. Sometimes we assume that people are just kind of like along for the ride. But the question I get asked much often is, what's the game plan for me? Where can I go from here? And you also have still a mix of people that are in the workforce. They're just kind of happy to be in this particular role, kind of leave me alone and just let me do my thing.
Right.
But most people that I encounter and engage are wanting to figure out, how can I grow? Because oftentimes growth also means I financially am gaining. But the other part of it is, and I've admonished people as well to say, even if you transition from an organization, while you are in that organization, gain as much knowledge as you possibly can, because it's going to help you no matter where you are. And so what we hope, though, is an investment that it will help us continue to be able to be very productive and grow. But starting out with a very effective training plan, a very effective development plan, also have it have options to it. Don't always dictate that this is the only path that you can go, but have multiple paths. If you have multiple paths, it allows people to choose. Choice is very big these days in terms of the labor force and workforce.
So on that note, and you know, employee engagement is a topic that we could spend days on, right? There's so many different approaches, good, bad, and indifferent. So listening to the people, I love what you said there, you know, knowing what they want. When we think about the generational transfer dynamics at play across industry, whether it's manufacturing or elsewhere, you know, how are you customizing your approach to successfully tackling that and ensuring that we have a diverse workforce? And when we talk about diverse workforce, we're not talking, you know, there's lots of different definitions when we talk about making sure we have a diversity of thought in the workforce. What are some of your thoughts around tackling the generational transfer dynamics that's taking place?
Yeah, it's interesting. We spend a good bit of energy and time talking about the M word, but it's not just the M word. It actually is about, there are some, you know, broad swath of people in these different generations that are present in the workforce right now. But one of the things that I kind of gravitated toward is a quote that I heard that said that most small differences in the generations are really more attributable to the stage of life than it is to generational membership. And we talk about generational membership in terms of millennials, Gen X, boomers, et cetera. But it has more to do with stage of life. You know, somebody who's close to retirement, or somebody who's just gotten out of school, or somebody who's mid-career, those are where the real differences might be. And so how you respond to that is going to be real key. But I think that the idea of understanding what those differences are and responding to them are important. Because there's not a one-size-fit-all approach, and traditionally in the past, that has been an institutional approach. You know, just give everybody the same thing. Everybody doesn't want the same thing. Some people want the flexibility. I've dealt with requests from people who say, you know, I really just want to work half the time because, you know, I've got a spouse that works half time and we're trying to alternate our shifts so that we're taking care of our family. So understanding that, where you've got somebody who's got a talent that's valuable, demonstrate that flexibility. And flexibility is probably one of the biggest keys in any institution in managing differences in the workforce. Again, if you take the one size fit all, then ultimately you kind of die on the vine, because you won't attract people, you won't retain them, you won't have them be productive. They're going to leave you and go elsewhere.
Stage of life. That's going to be something we take away from this show for sure. You know? So how's that hand in hand with the diversity of thought and workplace? Why is that, you know, break through the cliche stuff, John? Why is that important? How has your organization gained from ensuring that, you know, you've got a great, successful, and very diverse team in place in Macon?
Yeah, well, what we do is, as we recruit, we actually go to various places, not just for us being in the production area. Certainly, we use a lot of the workforce from the technical colleges. Mm-hmm. We certainly also try to get people who have some production management and marketing or manufacturing experience. Mm-hmm. But we can pull from just about anywhere. One of the success stories I'll point to is that we have a lot of our activity in terms of recruiting and selection deal with people who are operators, just machine operator. We can train you on the basics of our machine because our machine hopefully is different than somebody else's. So we don't expect you to come with that knowledge. But one of the success stories I point to oftentimes is someone that we talked to who was driving for Pizza Hut. I shouldn't say Pizza Hut, but for one of the local chains.
There you go. but I do it all the time.
But he was a driver for Pizza Hut. And so he came, he interviewed, and actually, the supervisors, there was a typical what we have is a panel of supervisors. Typically, not just one person interviewing, but we have a panel of supervisors. And initially, when they saw the resume and the background, they kind of like, really? You mean you think this person is going to be successful in our operation? But after the interview and the way the person was able to express themselves, the thought process that he had, they said, let's give him a shot. And he has been very successful in a very short period of time. Mm. So you've got to be open to not people having the kind of experience that's directly related to what it is that you do, but having that difference of thought. And so that means that they have to have either mental or mechanical or other aptitude that's going to contribute to the success. It's not always going to be that very straightforward, tangible, exact kind of experience that you're doing in your particular plant. So that is something that you have to train people who are selecting to be able to kind of mine for that.
Great point. John, weigh in on...
Yeah. John, I was going to ask, did you, as far as since Kumho's still fairly new, let's say, to Georgia, did you guys utilize you talked about the technical college system and so forth. Did you use any other resources, like the state's number one workforce development initiative? Did you use that as a ramp up basically at the plant there?
No doubt about it. They're very active in the Central Georgia, Middle Georgia area. And so we leverage that as well. The Department of Labor Resources.
Quick Start.
Absolutely. Yep. We were a part of Quick Start. In fact, hopefully even we're going to engage them again for some other things as we continue to grow and develop. Quick Start, we've got job assessment that's being done currently, actually tomorrow, with some people coming in to help us refine some job descriptions and job duties so that it allows us to, again, recruit people better. So we definitely leverage the resources of the state.
Yeah, we were talking about area development earlier. One of the main categories where Georgia scored the highest was workforce development, actually, because we still have Quick Start, which is the number one workforce development initiative.
It's a secret weapon.
Yep.
One of secret weapons.
It is indeed.
Without a doubt. And also the local development authorities as well. Like I said, that's something that we still rely on them. We still have constant conversations. The good thing about it is that those development authorities don't just bring you and leave you. They bring you and they stay with you for the whole journey.
That's a great point.
Because they've got an investment that in the community, and they want to see that investment do well.
Yep. Great point. Well, John, again, this could be a week long segment, but we're very fortunate to have John today, but we're also even luckier to have him come back for a panel session, Trends of Track and Supply Chain, at the Georgia Manufacturing Summit on October 10th.
Yeah.
We're going to be tackling the four T's, talent, transportation, technology, and Will's favorite subject, tariffs.
Yes, sir.
Trade and tariffs. So looking forward to that. So, John, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
For coming back. John Holly, Deputy Chief People Officer with Kumho Tire, Georgia. And if you want to see more perspective from John, he keynotes quite a bit, but we've got him again up here in Atlanta on October 10th. And you can find out more information about that at GeorgiaManufacturingSummit.com. Okay. Up next today on Supply Chain Now Radio, we welcome Perry Falk, EVP of Carrier Sales with Nolan Transportation Group, which is a top 25 freight brokerage firm. They have 15,000 customers across North America, 1,000 employees across 13 branches. I had 12 in my notes, but 13, which they are growing as we prep for this show, which is great, Perry. And I don't know if we can talk about sales figures, but can we release the sales figures or not? Well, anyway,
you're going to talk to Perry about that.
Huh? All right,
I don't know if I'm allowed to. But okay. I know we're doing well. We're in that top 25, and we're gunning for that top 15, top 10 spot.
Perfect.
I don't want to get in any trouble here.
We won't get any trouble. We'll just think beef or Bezos typically, right. But very capable group over at New Orleans Transportation Group. A lot of growth in 12 years. So good morning, Perry.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
Glad that you're here. You know, so we're going to first start off. If you've had your head in a hole here and you don't know what Nolan Transportation Group does, tell us, you know, how are you helping your customers solve problems?
Sure. You know, we're a 3PL, third party logistics company. We handle domestic, over the road transportation in all of North America. Primary focus being truckload. We do a lot of LTL, expedited. We move a ton of containers. We have a really, really strong drayage department at NTG that we've grown over the last few years. I think last month, we moved about 6,000 containers over the road, taking them from the port to wherever they need to go. Mm-hmm. So that's a big part of our business. But, you know, primarily our bread and butter is we are a truckload freight broker. And, you know, we love it. We do it every single day and we really enjoy it.
And we're going to talk more about the two sides of that business, the shippers and the carriers. But sure. I want to piggyback back to the John segment because this is an important one for the Nolan Transportation Group. When you grow as fast as y'all have,
yeah,
that huge emphasis on talent, you know, acquiring it, onboarding it, making sure it's engaged and successful. Let's talk more about that. You sure. know, what are some of the hallmarks of your talent acquisition strategy?
So our number one thing at NTG is culture. I mean, it's a hallmark of our business. It's one of our core principles is, you know, we are really proud of the culture we've created. It's kind of cliche. We say we work hard and play hard, but you know, we really live that and we really own that. It's a young workforce. We take a lot of people, whether it's their first job right out of college, second job, something like that. But it's, you know, it's a young and aggressive workforce. I'm glad I've made an impact on John here. He said the M word instead of saying millennial. We're talking about, you know, we were talking about.
You beat me to it, Barry.
I know. Well, I was happy I heard that. But, you know, we don't. The term millennial gets a bad reputation, and it's not something we throw around because, you know, we're looking at people, we're looking at the right type of people. And I don't care what age range or demographic or whatever group you look at, you're going to find people that want to work hard and want to do well and want to succeed. And we really try and target those people who, you know, have that kind of grind mentality, that want to work and really want to do well. And we create an environment where they can come in, have a lot of fun. You know, as we all know, the freight business, the supply chain, it's stressful, and we try and make everything else a pretty fun work environment for them and really give them a path to succeed. I think one of the things we do well is, you know, it's a really merit-based system that we have at NTG. If you come in on day one, you've got the right ideas and you're ready, you know, you speak up and you've got a better path, we're always open to listen. We were talking about we have a really flat structure. You know, everyone on our leadership team, top to bottom, is always open to listen and just hear you out. And then if you have the right idea, we're going to run with it. We're agile. We're quick. We always joke about, you know, we had somebody that was moving to one of our Grand Rapids offices and we had a joke of, you know, hey, we're not going to move you in a month. We're moving you tomorrow. I mean, when we're ready to make a decision, we go, we act on it. We jump.
A true supply chain organization.
Yeah. When I moved from Nashville to Atlanta, I mean, the phone call I think was about 10 a.m. And by about 1 p.m. I had flight and hotel ready and was, you know, heading home packing. I mean, we're ready to go. So that's just how we work. And young people, at least for myself, you know, they like that agility. They like being heard and being, you know, able to make quick decisions, not like they're fighting against a corporate bureaucracy or a hierarchy yeah. where, hey, we've got to file this up, you know, to the manager, senior manager, whatever, mm-hmm. all the way up the chain. You know, if you've got it, we're going to run with it.
So it seems like y'all, speaking of agility and not going through that proverbial chain of command, do y'all encourage decision making to be pushed down and give folks the autonomy of making decisions?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we encourage our, you know, everyone that's coming in, we want to develop new leaders. You know, everyone that's in a manager role, team leader, general manager, regional, vice president, all the way up. Everybody started as an entry-level employee for us, which we're really, really proud of. You know, there are a few people on our very senior management team that don't fit that mold, but everybody else in the organization started on day one. So it's all organic growth. It's all inside leaders that have grown up through the company. And you see that around you and you start talking to people and hearing their stories. You know, it makes for a really exciting place. And you know that on day one, that there's opportunity for you and someone from the outside is not going to come and leapfrog you. If you come in and work hard, you've got that chance to do well. So, I mean, our guys and girls are just as eager to succeed as anybody else at any level of, you know, any business.
So, and speaking of which, you're hiring a lot of people. There are lots of opportunities. I was checking out your career board earlier.
You looking for a job? Want to come over and pray with us? We'd love to have you.
No more jobs. But for folks that may be listening, that may be looking for to join an organization, much like you're describing, ntgfreight.com, right?
Yeah.
ntgfreight.com. I want to make sure we put that out there.
Oh, yeah.
I want to go back to the culture you mentioned. That's what you led off with. That was really important to how y'all do business and the team and important to your growth. So a couple things that I was doing, again, doing a little Googling here. So it looks like y'all have been named one of the top places, workplaces in Nashville.
Yep.
For your NTG Nashville team. You've been named one of the top workplaces here in Atlanta, which I'm assuming is a company-wide award.
Yeah.
Right?
I guess. I don't really know.
Yeah. And then we'll claim it is. Sure. And then I also noticed a ton of community involvement work you're doing, whether it's donating food drives or I saw where you had hosted a recent 5K fundraiser.
Yeah, we did a 5K for the Rhino. I tried to run it. I got a little tired near the end, but we raised a lot of money. We're very involved, very active. I mean, but, you know, if you walk into any NTG office, any one of our, I guess it's 12 or 13, I don't know. But you walk into any office, there's energy. You can feel it right when you walk in the door. We hear this anytime any of our partners come in or anybody comes in to visit. You've got music blaring. You walk in, people are up, they're active. They're, you know, shouting across the room. They're all working. And it's really vibrant and it's a lot of fun. You know, I noticed actually that, there's a guy in the room right next to us that was sitting in there brokering freight. I noticed he had some of the websites pulled up and you can be a freight broker and sit at a desk, sit in your basement and do it. But we created an environment that makes it a lot of fun and it's really engaging and there's no question why it's one of the most fun places to work.
We need to make him a Rhino, right?
We'll see what we've got, what it takes.
Connecting that culture and some of the things that you do.
Sure.
And I hate to use the M word, but you know, let's just call it what it is.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about the general, not necessarily the people and the generalizations and all that stuff, but just really the age of the work of that workforce demographic. How does all of what you're describing play into being able to attract and go after what is a plurality of the workforce today?
I mean, one of the things we do, a majority of the people that work at NTG were referred by somebody else. You have people in there that really like what they're doing and they've been there for a long time and they really stick with it. And then they say, hey, they find friends that they know would fit our culture, that want to work hard, that want to succeed. And they say, hey, come and interview, come take a shot. And, you know, they give them an opportunity. We just hired, we hire in classes between 100, 150 at a time and have really, really good retention numbers with those groups. But you sit in that room and say, hey, raise your hand if you were referred by somebody. And more than half the people in there raise their hand. And so that culture sort of feeds itself and you find someone that gets it and they can find somebody else that understands it and brings them in. And, you know, we were talking about this earlier when we were talking about, you know, millennials and getting a bad rap or whatever. But we also talked about when you're in logistics, you have to be connected at all times. Mm. And, you know, people and I'm a millennial and people in my generation, I'll say that, you know, we're better connected than anybody. And when it comes to, you know, dealing in supply chain, you have a problem that comes up at 10 o'clock at night. You know, someone young that's on their phone all the time. Yeah, they're staring at social media, doing something, browsing on the phone, right? But they're going to see that email at 10 o'clock and not wait till 9:15 the next day, checking their email, having a cup of coffee. And that problem for us is already going to be resolved. We're going to already have found it, fixed it, got a solution and smoothed everything over by 9 o'clock the next morning. Someone who's not quite as agile, not quite as connected, you know, is going to be behind the eight ball. And so we're really happy about that. We're proud about, you know, the type of people we bring in.
The speed of business today. I mean, a lot of what you're describing enables an organization to move faster. And that's part of the challenge. You got to work smarter and we got to move smarter, so to speak, but we got to move faster too. So, one of the things we want to kind of conclude on with your segment here today, Perry, going back to the shippers and carriers, and, you know, we've had this conversation on the show before, Will and Ben, about the need to show more love to our carriers, right? They're often overlooked. They can be overlooked, especially drivers and different players within the carrier umbrella. Let's talk about some of the things you really, what stood out on the website, what stood out in the prep on the show, what stood out in our bullpen conversation was how deliberately you are and the organization is at taking care of the carriers. Speak to that.
So it is a core piece of our business. It is a pillar of what we focus on is treating our carriers like customers and not just giving lip service to that idea, but really believing into it, buying into it, and doing, you know, making decisions. Sorry, I was going to say choices and decisions, but making
new word. I like it.
Yeah. Making decisions in any situation as if that carrier is your customer. And you know, what I run our carrier sales team, and it has been a project I've been working on for several years to really grow out a really strong and robust carrier sales team that is focused on these carriers like customers. You know, we treat them the same way where you have a dedicated account manager that's in charge of that carrier. You know, you handle their problems, you build a strong relationship where, you know, you can go out there and broker freight and deal with a new carrier every single day and have a pretty good business. Or you can have a different person in your organization deal with the same carriers every single day with no real organizational structure. And that can work for a while too. But what we have found that carriers really respond to, they really like, is have that single point of contact to know that when something goes wrong, there's someone in your corner. And it's not just, hey, customer's word over everything else, the customer rules, but the carrier is just as important, because this doesn't work without both sides of this, without both sides of the equation. So, you know, when it's something as small as, and we've seen it so many times, and it's crazy that like a detention charge, right? So a carrier, it's taking them a few extra hours to load. I'm sure you guys deal with that at Kumho. Yes, plenty absolutely. Of time. Yes. Loading tires. But
when free time is up.
Right. When that free time's up, and it's maybe $100. And as any business, you can cut yourself off to thousands of trucks worth of capacity by deciding not to pay that carrier that $100 for their wait time. Mm. Saying, hey, sorry, the customer's not paying it. We're not paying it. You know, don't worry about it. And we see time and time again that company, then that carrier cuts you off, and yep. you lose access to all that. So when you're talking about a capacity crunch and, you know, the market being tight, you don't have the opportunity to limit the carriers you can run with. That $100 is not worth it. Mm-hmm. So having people that are focused on solving those problems and saying, look, I'm invested in a long-term relationship and not viewing a carrier transactionally is so, so important. And when you have the scale that we have, we can take advantage of that, where we can talk to any carrier and find them. You know, if they want to go from Atlanta to Dallas, I've got a load for you today. We either ran one yesterday or we got one tomorrow. You know, we have that scale of a business now where we can have such a wide reach to a lot of different carriers. And you bring that approach, man, and they keep coming back and they really, really like it.
Love it.
And with all the tech options available now, right. You're getting smaller and smaller carriers and mid-sized carriers. And to those guys, those delay fees, they kill them.
Right.
I mean, it hurts their business.
And we've heard from them that they don't like dealing with an app or dealing just through email. They want right. to talk to someone.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, that workforce is an aging workforce. I mean, I think the average driver age is 57, 58 yeah. years old. These are guys and girls that have, you know, done their entire career on the phone. They're used to talking to someone. They want someone they know they can trust. And those relationships go a long way. They'll go out of their way for you. They'll meet that price that a customer is squeezing you on to make that happen. If they know when things go wrong, you'll take care of them and you're in their corner truly. Right. And it's created a good balance in our organization where we have the fighting then goes from our carrier brokers and our customer brokers internally rather than us as a company against a carrier. And it makes for good, healthy competition and healthy growth. And
right.
we end up going down the right path.
Yeah, you got to take care of those guys for sure.
100%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Terrific. Well, Perry, really appreciate your segment.
Yeah.
I love the passion you bring to the table. It's very evident. And I'm sure that's part of what has helped Nolan Transportation Group grow as fast is developing new leaders. I mean, mm-hmm. certainly one of the things you mentioned
yep.
and how you bring in these classes, 100, 150 people, and you're there to charge them to make decisions, to become a better leader, to take care of both shippers and carriers. Really neat organization. I appreciate what you are doing in the community, too. So to our audience, learn more, ntgfreight.com. Want to give a big thanks to Perry Falk, EVP of Carrier Sales with the Nolan Transportation Group. What a great story here in the supply chain city, Ben.
Yeah, I really appreciate Amen. You having me. Thanks, guys.
You bet. All right, so we're going to wrap up there on about three pages of items, I think, guys. So first off, it's still in development, but we're proud of where it is. We just launched the new website for Supply Chain Now Radio. imagine that, supplychainnowradio.com. We encourage our folks to check it out. We're still working on the library of content and some of the ways that we can engage our audience and our guests and you name it, and make it a real useful repository of great information. But check it out. It's live now, supplychainnowradio.com. Next up, we're going to be back in Studio Katie tomorrow. We've got a great show. We're going to be featuring Elba Pareja Gallagher, which is a huge friend of the show there, Will.
Oh, yeah.
Show Me 50 and UPS. Joe DeSantis with FTI Consulting, which has a huge office right here in Atlanta. He leads their consulting practice. Jessica Clayton, my business partner with Talent Stream. She's also on the board with Apex Industrial Crescent Chapter, which is based up there in the Greenville-Spartanburg area of South Carolina. Upcoming events, a ton of webinars. Webinars continue to get resonate well, folks. You know, as we talk about it, Will and Ben, it's tough to get folks out. Not that there's any kind of traffic in Atlanta, but you know, folks like closing their office door sometimes, or their home, or wherever, and eating their turkey sandwich and hearing best practices digitally. So trying to go after those members of the M crowd there, Perry.
There you go.
But very resonates well. We got some upcoming webinars there. The Georgia Manufacturing Summit. Now, we can't talk more enough about this big event. They're expecting about 800 people to come out, as I mentioned. We have got John Holly, along with leaders from Southwire, Legility, and Descartes on our Trends of Tracking Supply Chain. Ben, you're going to be there. Will, I think you're going to be there too.
Wouldn't miss it.
Wouldn't miss it.
Indeed.
Big event. And again, encourage our audience to check that out at Georgia Manufacturing Alliance.com or Georgia Manufacturing Summit.com. Jason Moss, founder and CEO of the GMA, is doing good work there. A week and 12 days or 12 days later, we're going to be having the APEX Regional Supply Chain Leadership Forum, which is a mouthful. That's been finalized October 19th and 20th. That Friday, October 19th, is going to be several site tours, site visits and plant tours. And then Saturday, October 20th, we've got four great speakers from across industry talking about a variety of topics. We're going to be at Georgia Tech. It is an open event for APEX members and non-members. We've got a lot of different sponsors that are making it happen. They keep pricing very low, but we're capped at 75 attendees. So check more information on that. The best way to get more information is shoot me a note at evp@apexatlanta.org, and we'll shoot you all the details. We've got about 40 people signed up for that thus far. All right, so I've mentioned some of the things that are on my radar, everyone in the room. But Will, Ben, what's on your radar?
Well, you know, the Venture Atlanta, they announced the 67 companies that are going to be part of the Venture Atlanta conference. That's October 16th and 17th, I believe, right, Ben?
I think that's right. Yeah.
So they have your presenting companies. I believe there was 33 of those that are the more established companies. Just off the top of my head, I know that BAM Worldwide, financing more in the factoring and trucking space. They're one of those presenting sponsors. And they also have the startup companies. And one of those is our friend Curo Global.
I was about to say
buddy
that.
Greg White.
Yeah. Beat me to it.
Yeah.
And our friend Paul Noble with Audit.
That's right.
He's on there as well.
Yeah. So. Another alum of the show. In fact, speaking of Paul Noble and Amari is going to be speaking at the Georgia Tech Supply Chain Logistics.
Oh, good.
Lunch event today. I was going to give details on that, but they're on one of my 17 pages I can't find right now. Venture Atlanta, Greg White with Curo Global. That's been a neat story. He was on with us last week talking about successfully engaging millennials, which, you know, and it's not about them. It's about us, how we can change our perspective, which really both y'all, John and Perry, spoke to. Ben, what else is on your radar?
Let's see. Next week's pretty busy. So I will actually be up for CSCMP. Actually has their annual Edge conference up in Nashville. That is Monday and Tuesday, actually Wednesday as well. But I will only be there Monday, as Tuesday is also Next Generation Manufacturing has their signature event on Tuesday back here in Atlanta as well. That's at Mercedes-Benz Stadium coming up. Also, the Southern Automotive Conference actually is the 3rd through the 5th next week. So very, very busy next week. Are you going to be there also, John?
I'm not. I know of it, but I personally won't be there. I'll be
down there taking care of people.
Nice.
But their products will be there.
Absolutely.
Their Indeed. Products will be there for sure.
Indeed. And then in addition, there's a couple more coming up. The IoT World is actually going to be October 29th and 30th. That's at the Hyatt Regency here in Atlanta as well. And then FabTech is November 6th through the 8th here, which is the largest one of the largest manufacturing shows in North America, but mostly pertaining to the metal fabrication industries. So a lot going on here to close out the year. Absolutely. Sure. It's weird to say we're actually saying close out the year.
That's part of what makes Atlanta Supply Chain City, though. Folks come in here. They want to be here. It's easy to get in and out. Great trade show facilities, yep. A ton of associations, a ton of companies and supply chain expertise here. And of course, being close to the talent and the technology space, that's what makes Metro Atlanta special. So we've been trying to fight to keep this cat in the bag, but we just finalized a lot of pieces and we'll be formally launching this in the next couple of weeks. We are going to be Apex Atlanta, who sponsors Supply Chain Now Radio, is going to be partnering with our great friends at the Metro Atlanta Chamber and our great friends over at CSCMP Atlanta Roundtable to hold the 2019 Atlanta Supply Chain Awards, which is going to be March 12th at the Buckhead Club. That's become official. We are now working up. We've got the awards almost defined, working on the criteria, working on some sponsorship packages. But mark your calendars, March 12th. It's going to be a lunchtime event at the Buckhead Club, and we'll have a lot more information on that in the weeks to come. And want to really appreciate the Chamber's leadership and collaboration, as always, for helping to make that happen, along with our great friends Dave Maddox and the whole board and organization at CSCMP Atlanta Roundtable. All right. So any other events that we missed?
I think that's about it.
Family reunions, big football games. Clemson's got Syracuse, right?
Syracuse, yeah.
At noon this Saturday. Revenge game is right. But looking forward to that. Glad it's football season. And of course, we're all going to be cheering on the Braves as they kick off the playoffs here in about 10 days or so. Hoping we can win down the stretch and ensure home field advantage.
Hope the Cardinals get in there, man.
Let's leave them out.
I'm kidding. Will, we're looking out for it's our second favorite team because we love Will Haraway so much. So we'll hopefully the Cards will get it in. They're a good team. Love St. Louis. All right. So to wrap up the show, I want to thank our sponsors, Apex Atlanta. And let's not forget about TalentStream, a WeBank certified recruiting and staffing firm that specializes in helping organizations find top talent in the engineering, the manufacturing, the supply chain space. So for more information about Apex, you can check us out at apexatlanta.org. And if you want more information on TalentStream, check us out at talentstreamstaffing.com. And that wraps us up. I hope everyone has a wonderful week. I want to give Perry and John, and of course, Ben and Will, a big thanks for coming in. And until next time, Katie.
Yeah, and I guess till next time is just a day away.
That's right. We'll take a quick break.
Yeah, we'll see you guys tomorrow on Supply Chain Now Radio.